News of the Times, Serial Killer Saturdays, The Notorious Nurse Wilmot Mystery. Welcome to News of the Times. In today's episode, it is 1881, Sheffield, and the Booth household has undergone tragedy after tragedy within 2 weeks. The Booth's son, a sickly child for 3 years, but not near death, has been given a nurse to care for him by his father, a doctor. He dies within 6 weeks. The daughter, a healthy young girl, has grown attached to the kindly nurse and has requested that she stays on. Her wish is granted, and she surprisingly dies within 2 weeks of her brother's death. Mrs. Booth, utterly distraught at the quick succession of the deaths of her children, is placed under the care of Nurse Wilmot and immediately becomes extremely unwell. What transpires is a case that gripped the newspapers and divided the public and the papers into the two camps of did she or didn't she? The mysterious case of Notorious Nurse Wilmot is today's episode of Serial Killer Saturdays. We hope you enjoy the show. October 1880, Sheffield. Mr. William Booth, a well-respected surgeon with two practices, and his wife Eliza Booth live with their son, also named William, and their daughter. Their son William had been unwell for some 3 years, and in order to help with his care, Mr. Booth hires a nurse from the local nursing home, 27-year-old Nurse Wilmot, who begins there on the 8th of August. Quiet and with a pleasing manner, Nurse Wilmot becomes a favourite of both of the children. On the 8th of August, William Booth, the younger, becomes terribly unwell, suffering from convulsions and dies. A sad day for the family. 8 days later, Miss Booth, who had previously enjoyed excellent health, also dies. The shock and the loss of both of their children leaves both Mr. Booth and Mrs. Booth utterly distraught. Mr. Booth must continue work at his two practices. Mrs. Booth, suffering from melancholia and minor heart palpitations, now falls under the daily care of Nurse Wilmot. Almost immediately, Mrs. Booth begins to suffer odd and unexpected medical issues, such as twitching and the cramping in her legs and face. From the Sheffield Daily Telegraph, the 9th of February, 1881, Mr. Booth's eldest son had been unhealthy for some years, but was in his usual health, poor health, but not apparently likely to die. The prisoner was attached this time to a nurse's home in Glossop Road in Sheffield, and was engaged as a nurse from that establishment to attend upon young Mr. Booth. She came about the 1st of September, and on the 8th of October, young Mr. Booth died suddenly in convulsions. Whilst the prisoner was attending young Mr. Booth, she had gained the affection of Miss Booth, who desired that she might remain in the house for some short time after her brother's death, and she did so. Miss Booth immediately sickened, and although previously in perfect health, was taken suddenly ill in the library on the 16th of October and died in convulsions. These terrible shocks had considerable influence upon Mrs. Booth, who, on the day of her daughter's death, also showed symptoms of illness, unusual in character. Mrs. Booth was attended by Mr. Pye Smith, the surgeon, who found that she was suffering from palpitations and that her mouth was dry. Whilst speaking to her, he noticed that she was attacked with twitching or cramps in the left leg. With these symptoms and some other events, their mind casts back to their children and the fear that Nurse Wilmot is trying to kill Mrs. Booth as well. From the Sheffield Daily Telegraph, the 4th of December, 1880, the Booth case. This morning, at 10:30, Mary Ann Wilmot, aged 27, nurse, will again be brought up charged with attempting to poison Mrs. Booth, the wife of Mr. W. H. Booth, surgeon of Jell Street. It is expected that Mrs. Booth will be able to appear and give evidence, and Mr. Booth will also be a witness. There will be some 12 or 13 witnesses called, including 3 medical gentlemen. Rapid efforts are made to pull multiple strings of evidence together. One of the key points of the case is the involvement of the servant girl, Emily Parker. Emily attests to having been sent by Nurse Wilmot to the chemist's for morphia. The chemist agrees that the request via the servant girl was made. Nurse Mary Ann Wilmot firmly denies having sent the girl to the chemist's. Did she use the servant girl to be able to throw suspicion on her if the poisoning was uncovered? However, unbeknownst to Mary Ann, she was overheard directing the girl to the chemist's by the gardener, who had just returned from the funeral of the boy. This stunning lie becomes a key point of evidence in the case against Nurse Wilmot. From the Staffordshire Sentinel, the 6th of December, 1880, the alleged poisoning at Sheffield. At Sheffield on Saturday, Mary Ann Wilmot was charged with attempting to murder Eliza Booth, wife of Mr. Booth, surgeon. Mr. Gain, a barrister, stated that the prisoner was in attendance on both Mrs. Booth, who suffered great depressions from the death of her son and daughter, and medical evidence would show that Mrs. Booth's symptoms were those of narcotic poisoning. It would be sought to connect the prisoner with these symptoms, stating that Dr. Booth had 2 surgeries, and from one a case containing tincture of opium and sal volatile had been removed. A little girl would say she had been sent by the nurse for what the girl called orphia, and other evidence would be called. Mrs. Booth examined, said on the day when she was first seized with the attack, the prisoner had given her all her food. The case was adjourned till Tuesday, bail being allowed. As more evidence is gathered in the inquest, Mr. Booth is questioned regarding his suspicions. Although Nurse Wilmot was in charge of the day-to-day care of his wife whilst he was away at his practice, her care was overseen by Dr. Pye Smith, who is certain that Eliza Booth, under the care of Nurse Wilmot, had been given morphine. In addition, Mr. Booth, who has prescription medicines held in a locked room, has audited the drugs within and has found that some strychnine that has been kept there has gone missing. From the Staffordshire Sentinel, the 8th of December, 1880, the Sheffield Mystery. At Sheffield on Tuesday, Mary Ann Wilmot was again charged with attempting to poison Mrs. Booth. Dr. Booth narrated the circumstances under which, after the death of his son and daughter, he was alarmed by a sudden summons to his wife. He kept at his residence in Jell Street a quantity of strychnine in a bottle filled to the stopper. Part was taken, and not by himself. On being asked whether his attention was specially directed to this bottle, Dr. Booth became much excited. Holding up his hand toward the prisoner, he made up one bottle of medicine for his wife from Dr. Pye Smith's prescription, but never prescribed or made up any medicine containing strychnine. Dr. Pye Smith said he was called to Mrs. Booth's, who was suffering from palpitation and cramp. His prescription did not contain opium, morphine, or strychnine. The day after Miss Booth was buried, Mrs. Booth's speech was thick, and the pupils of her eyes were unnaturally small. She said there was morphia in the medicine. He replied, "No, I have prescribed none, but it seems as if you have had some." The evidence is considered strong enough to hold Nurse Mary Ann Wilmot and proceed to trial for the attempted murder of Eliza Booth. The prosecution at the time only attempts to try Nurse Wilmot for the attempted murder of Mrs. Booth, as it is deemed that her case is strongest, although poisonous substances have also been found in the children, now dead and buried. The case takes place in February 1881 in Leeds and attracts huge crowds, all jostling to find a place within. The case in complete detail covered pages of the papers for days. From the Sheffield Daily Telegraph, 9th of February 1881, the trial of Nurse Wilmot. The trial of Mary Annie Wilmot, 27, professional nurse of the nurses' home in Glossop Road, Sheffield, commenced yesterday afternoon at Leeds Assizes, Crown Court, before Mr. Justice Manistry and a common jury. The charge upon which the nurse stands indicted is that she feloniously did administer and cause to be taken by one Eliza Booth certain poison, to wit, morphia or other destructive things, with intent to murder her at Sheffield on or about the 21st of October, 1880. Mrs. Booth is the wife of Mr. W. H. Booth, surgeon of Jell Street, and on the 8th of August, Nurse Wilmot went to Mr. Booth for the purpose of nursing his son, Mr. William Booth, who died on the 8th of October. 8 days later, Miss Booth died, and then Mrs. Booth became unwell. She continued to be ill from the 16th to the 21st of October, and was attended by Mr. R. J. Pye Smith, Dr. Thomas, and Mr. G. K. Thorpe. She was sick and suffered from twitching and convulsion. On the Wednesday, she vomited after having taken a little whiskey and water, and the next day, the 20th, she was in a state of coma and only recovered after the application of a stomach pump. The prosecution relies on the evidence of some 16 witnesses to prove that poison was administered by the nurse to Mrs. Booth, and their examination before the magistrate occupied 4 days. The nurse, however, made a complete denial of the truth of the charges against her. When formally charged, she replied, "I am entirely innocent of the charge made against me. I never sent the girl Emily Parker to Mr. Goucher, the chemist, either for morphia or for opium, or anything else that was likely to injure Mrs. Booth. I only gave her food and medicines, which were always prepared for me. I should have been very sorry to have injured Mrs. Booth or any of the family. They were very kind to me." Justice Manistry, in his charge to the grand jury, after stating that there seemed no doubt that poison was administered or taken, observed that the two questions to consider were, who was the hand that administered the poison, and with what intent was it administered? At 3:45, Mary Ann Wilmot was called, and the prisoner passed up the steps into the dock with an evident desire to bear her dreadful ordeal as bravely as possible. She stepped so sharply into view that part of her dress caught the railing and had to be disengaged by an officer. Very pale and harassed, thin and pinched about the face, did she look. She was dressed in black, black bonnet and black gloves. Over her dress, she wore a dark tweed waterproof, which on reaching the dock, she hastily removed and placed beside her. A little later, feeling the atmosphere chilly, she threw about her shoulders a dark tartan shawl, which fell from her now and again as she leaned forward to listen to the opening address, the counsel for the prosecution. She was about to place herself to watch the case when her solicitor, Mr. Binney, motioned her to stand up and answer the charge which was to be put to her. By this time, the new jury had been empanelled, and the clerk of arraigns read over the indictment to which she was asked to plead. Her reply, in a low, though firm voice, was, "Not guilty." Almost immediately, there is sympathy with the poor working girl with neat appearance and manners, Mary Ann Wilmot. As the trial commences, the opening statement by the prosecution is regularly interrupted by the continuing crowds of people trying to force their way in to watch the trial. From the Sheffield Daily Telegraph on the 9th of February 1881, the trial of Nurse Wilmot. Immediately after Mr. Waddy rose to open the case for the prosecution, he had to stop several times in consequence of interruptions in the galleries. The women who had been waiting so impatiently outside poured into the galleries in a noisy, turbulent torrent. They came in with a rush, jostling one another in their eagerness to get the seats to the front, where they craned their necks to secure a fuller view of the unfortunate young woman in the dock. Leaning against the staircase in one of the side galleries was one of the nurses from the Sheffield home where the prisoner was employed. Several other nurses were in the same gallery. Not very many of the females in the court were from Sheffield. All the barristers, those who had business and those who had none, seemed to be on their benches, and the passages were filled with people. Mr. Waddy had no sooner made a fresh departure with his opening speech than another interruption took place. Mary Ann Wilmot was almost within touching distance of Mr. Waddy as he rose to resume the case against her. While the interruptions were taking place, the nurse, who on entering had looked first to the judge and then to the jury, now turned round to each side of the court and stole a glance at the galleries, where so many unlovable-looking females were leaning over to look at her. Her gaze was quickly averted from their pitiless eyes and fixed again on the stern array of judges and jury before her. In the round seat at her back sat a female attendant, who was evidently there to attend to any wishes the prisoner might have during the proceeding. The prosecution begins to build its case against Mary Ann. Point 1. The evidence of the servant girl Emily Parker, corroborated by the gardener John Parr and the chemist Mr. Goucher. From the Sheffield Daily Telegraph, the 9th of February 1881, the trial of Nurse Wilmot. Prosecutor Mr. Waddy briefly alluded to the deaths of young Mr. Booth and Miss Booth, hurrying on to the seizure of Mrs. Booth. A very short time he reached what he called almost the turning point of the case, the evidence of John Parr, the gardener. He read the prisoner's protestation of innocence made on the day of her committal at Sheffield. Then, it will be remembered, she distinctly stated she had never sent the girl, Emily Parker, to Mr. Groucher, the chemist, for morphia or anything that would injure Mrs. Booth. By this statement, said Mr. Waddy, she cut the ground from any defence which might be set up that she had administered the morphia to do her patient good. Parr would state that when he was sitting in the kitchen getting his dinner, he heard the nurse ask Emily Parker to go with the case and bottle to Goucher to fetch the morphia. Thus they had the evidence of Goucher, who supplied it, of Parker, who fetched it, and of Parr, who heard the order given. The case and the bottle had since disappeared. It was last seen in the nurse's charge, the whole thing having been returned to her by Emily Parker. Point 2. The sudden illness and seizures experienced by Mrs. Booth. From the Sheffield Daily Telegraph, the 9th of February, 1881, the trial of Nurse Wilmot. Mr. Waddy then went on to narrate the circumstances of Mrs. Booth's serious seizure. He laid special stress on the statement that after the nurse had administered tea to the patient, the latter relapsed into dead unconsciousness, and that an hour to an hour and a half elapsed before the nurse called anybody. Then she asked the help of Emily Parker, who found Mrs. Booth propped up in bed. Prisoner made the remark, "It's my opinion that Mrs. Booth is going to die." At this point, Mr. Waddy leant forward towards the jury and, pointing with his forefinger, said, with such emphasis, "Yes, after this deadly poison had time to do its deadly work, then the nurse called the attention of Mrs. Roberts and Miss Harrison, ladies who were in the house at the time. These ladies, of course, were terribly alarmed, and they sent for Mr. R. J. Pye Smith, surgeon, who found Mrs. Booth in a state which plainly pointed to poisoning. In fact, continued the learned counsel, morphia was plain as if it had been written in letters upon her forehead." As the prosecutor outlines his case step by step, Mary Ann is heard sobbing on the bench. She's a tragic-looking creature, and much sympathy is given to her in contrast to the harshness of Mr. Waddy's approach in his outline of evidence. From the Sheffield Daily Telegraph, 9th of February, 1881, the trial of Nurse Wilmot. At this point, the prisoner fairly broke down. Although audible sounds reached the court, it was evident that she was sobbing bitterly. Her lips could be seen quivering, and her whole features were painfully agitated. Still, Mr. Waddy, who could scarcely see the effect his words had produced, went on, most mercilessly. "Nobody else could have done it," he said. "Nobody but the prisoner had armed herself with the deadly poison to do it with." The prisoner looked very piteously towards the jury, as if to mutely appeal to them. Point 3. The motive. The prosecution continues by stating that what would be a motive to some would not be a motive to others. As Mary Ann protests her innocence, she, of course, has not stated a motive for the attempted killing of a family. However, some investigation into her possessions would seem to indicate a possible motive of theft. It would seem that Mary Ann had found an old trunk belonging to the Booth family, and took it to her room. On the trunk, she had placed a sign with her name, Wilmot, and location. Within the trunk, mixed amongst her own clothes and possessions, were items that had belonged to the now deceased daughter, Miss Booth, as well as items belonging to the not yet dead Mrs. Booth. Money and jewellery have also gone missing, but they are unable to be traced. From the Sheffield Daily Telegraph, the 9th of February, 1881, the trial of Nurse Wilmot. Mr. Waddy then went into the trunk story, narrating all about the removal of the trunk from a lumber room to the nurse's bedroom, and making a great deal of the nurse putting a label upon it with her own name. When that trunk was examined, articles of dress belonging to Mrs. Booth's deceased daughter, including a sealskin jacket, and other articles belonging to Mrs. Booth, were found mingled together with the prisoner's own property, a way which left no doubt that the trunk was taken from the lumber room into the prisoner's bedroom, packed with things which she had taken from the house, after rifling the drawers with jewellery as well. At all events, jewellery had disappeared, which could not now be found. All was made ready for removal, and if Mrs. Booth had died, Mr. Booth would not have been able, in his confusion and sorrow from the last blow, to have followed all the dresses or jewellery the members of the family had left behind. Mr. Waddy closed by reiterating that plunder was the motive for the crime, adding that if within one day she had already got so much into that trunk, there was no saying how much she would have got if she had not been interrupted. Therefore, he felt the motive was abundantly supplied. Mrs. Booth was questioned as to the missing jewellery, and on another point, which was fresh, the money of her daughter had at the time of her death. Mrs. Booth stated that she knew her daughter had £10.6, which was kept in her daughter's dressing case. The case was locked, and the prisoner had the keys. She had never been able to find that money since her daughter's death. Miss Booth had two sealskin jackets, one new, the latter had disappeared. It ought to have been in the closet where the prisoner slept. Point 4. The poison. The case and evidence was held strictly on the poisoning of Mrs. Booth. A range of poisons were suspected in having been used based on systems and symptoms experienced by Mrs. Booth, but also by the evidence of the poisons themselves, morphia or morphine. From the Sheffield Daily Telegraph, the 9th of February, 1881, the trial of Nurse Wilmot. Mr. Goucher, the chemist, had stated in his evidence that he had received a written order for the opium or the morphia bought by Emily Parker. The dose was given at 11 o'clock, and at 1 o'clock Mr. Pye Smith was there. He found Mrs. Booth with an unmistakable symptoms of poison by morphia, for the pupils of her eyes were contracted and her voice was thick. She said to him, "I think I must have had morphia. I think I have had morphia in my physic," and she then went on to describe that when she had taken the medicine she felt as if drunk, or as she imagined people felt when they were drunk. At 4:30 on that day, some tea was taken to Mrs. Booth by Nurse Wilmot, and almost immediately Mrs. Booth became unconscious. It would be of the utmost importance that the jury should remember that the prisoner, Nurse Wilmot, administered that tea, although the nurse was aware that, as a result of it, Mrs. Booth became unconscious, yet she never called to anyone's attention to Mrs. Booth's condition until an hour and a half afterwards. But she called Emily Parker to assist her, and they moved Mrs. Booth to a bed at a time when she was unconscious and quite stiff. Nurse Wilmot said to Emily Parker, "It is my opinion that Mrs. Booth is going to die, but although the prisoner seemed to be of this opinion, she delayed speaking about Mrs. Booth's state. At last, after this poison had been doing its deadly work, she called the attention of Mrs. Roberts and Miss Harrison of the terrible condition of the woman under her care. They were alarmed and called for the medical men. Mr. Pye Smith quickly came and found Mrs. Booth lying unconscious with her pupils dilated and the symptoms of poisoning as apparent as if morphia had been written upon her forehead. A stomach pump was obtained and the contents pumped out, bottled and sealed carefully by Mr. Pye Smith. These contents were handed to Mr. Bell, the analyst, and Dr. Tidy, and the former would state that they found morphia there in considerable quantities. This strychnine poison." From the Sheffield Daily Telegraph, the 9th of February, 1881, the trial of Nurse Wilmot. On the 17th of October, Mr. Pye Smith being delayed, his housekeeper, Mrs. Harwick, went to Mr. Booth's house and saw the prisoner, Nurse Wilmot. Now, the nurse had no right in Mr. Booth's surgery, nor had she any right with any medicine at all, but at 10:15 on this morning, Mrs. Harwick not only saw the nurse standing near the surgery door, but she saw her come out of the surgery with a medicine glass in her hand. Moreover, Mrs. Harwick saw the woman pouring something from a bottle into the medicine glass and then re-pour some of the liquid back again into the bottle, as she had taken out too large a dose. At that time she had no right whatever to be dealing with any medicine of any kind, for whatever was required would have been made up by prescription in the regular way by the chemist employed by Mr. Booth. The prisoner took the glass away with her at 10:15, and at 10:30 Mr. Pye Smith called. The appearance of Mrs. Booth attracted his attention. Immediately he saw that she had twitching in her face and in her fingers, and the jury would be told that the symptoms of that kind were strongly indicative of poisoning by strychnia, most marked and unmistakable. Observing that Mrs. Booth had these symptoms, he questioned her, and Mrs. Booth and proposed to prescribe for her. She made a remarkable reply. "Don't give me morphia," remembering how much she had suffered when that drug was given to her many years before. That was on the Sunday, and on Monday the 18th of October, Mr. Thorpe, a surgeon who lived near, called and saw Mrs. Booth and was immediately struck by the symptoms, and they at once presented to his mind poisoning by strychnia. A most important fact was that when he went into the surgery, Mr. Booth was not at home, and found there a strychnia bottle, which was at that time as nearly as possibly full, but not quite full. Mr. Pye Smith found Mrs. Booth at 11:00 in a state of unnatural excitement, and the nurse stated to him that Mrs. Booth had been duly excited in consequence of a lady having called upon her. They would find that this was utterly untrue. A combination of poisons. It would seem that between the several days, Mrs. Booth had shown clear signs of strychnia poisoning and of morphia poisoning. From the Sheffield Daily Telegraph, the 9th of February, 1881, the trial of Nurse Wilmot. The surgery was examined by Mr. Pye Smith and Mr. Thorpe, and in it they found a bottle containing acetate of morphia, a very small quantity. It was a remarkable fact that Mr. Booth, for months past, had never had the occasion to use either strychnia or morphia in his profession, and a singular corroboration of that fact was found in the position of the morphia bottle, which stuck to the shelf as it had not been moved for a long time. The strychnia bottle, however, which had been examined by Mr. Thorpe on Monday, the 10th of October, was found on the Thursday in the surgery, but the bottle was nearly half empty. In the meantime, there were in Mrs. Booth twitching and cramp, and all the other symptoms of poisoning by strychnia, upon which was another point which they would have to satisfy their mind. They would be told by Pye Smith that the symptoms he saw in Mrs. Booth, both the morning and the afternoon, were such symptoms as would be produced by poison, administered not more than about 2 hours before. Mr. Pye Smith put to her the very question which she practically answered when, before the magistrates, "Have you been giving Mrs. Booth laudanum in small doses?" The prisoner replied, "No, I have given her nothing of that sort." That is the case of the prosecution. They do, at one point, attempt to bring up the children's test results and their deaths, but the judge rules that inadmissible, stating that there was not one iota of evidence that the prisoner, Mary Ann Wilmot, had anything to do with the deaths of the children. The victim, Eliza Booth, her husband, the chemist, the servant girl, the gardener, the two visitors, the three doctors, and a statement by the cook are all brought forward to testify confirming the outline of the case. Mary Ann is fortunate in having a defence solicitor who is considered one of the finest in the land at the time. Mr. Digby Seymour, in what was described as making one of the most magnificent efforts ever made by any barrister in British history, picks apart the prosecution points and casts doubt on all pieces of evidence. Could anyone really believe that the poor, pathetic girl seen at the bar could possibly have killed three people for some few trinkets, he asks. Although there is no doubt that Mrs. Booth had received morphia as per her stomach contents, perhaps this was accidentally provided within the medicine that had been furnished by the doctors. She was merely a vessel to the incompetence of other doctors. From the Sheffield Daily Telegraph, the 9th of February, 1881, the trial of Nurse Wilmot. Mr. Digby Seymour was listened to throughout by learned counsel, common jurymen, and spectators with mingled wonders and delight. When he closed, a thrill of admiration passed through the court and almost expressed itself in applause. The prosecution was keen to bring in the evidence of the findings in the bodies of the children, but the judge disallowed this, stating that there was not a particle of evidence to connect their deaths with anything that was done by the prisoner. It works. Although the jury finds that Mary Ann did indeed give morphia to Mrs. Booth, they did not believe that she had given it to Mrs. Booth with any evil intent, and possibly the poisonous substances had been made up by others. Mary Ann is found not guilty and is discharged. From the Stroud Journal, the 12th of February, 1881, the Sheffield poisoning case. At Leeds Assizes on Tuesday before Justice Manistry, Mary Ann Wilmot, professional nurse, was charged with attempting to poison Mrs. Booth, wife of a surgeon at Sheffield. A son and a daughter of Dr. Booth had died somewhat mysteriously, being attended by the prisoner, and afterwards Mrs. Booth was attacked by similar symptoms, and it was believed that they were the result of strychnine or morphia. The exhumation of the bodies of the two children led to the present charge being preferred. Mr. Waddy, QC, opened the case for the prosecution, which occupied all Wednesday and Thursday. The case terminated on Thursday after a trial of 3 days in a verdict of acquittal. The jury returned that somewhat extraordinary verdict that the nurse, Mary Ann Wilmot, administered morphia to Mrs. Booth, but with what intent there was no evidence to show. That concludes this episode of Serial Killer Saturdays, the notorious Nurse Wilmot mystery. We very much hope you enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy this show, we would be grateful if you could like or subscribe to our channel. We upload 5 days a week. Mondays are murderous as we delve into the dark side of Regency and Victorian crime. Wednesdays are wicked, where we pull together stories with a similar theme, such as Doctors of Death. Fridays are frightful, where we look at crimes in a location, such as stories from the stage to murder and scandal in the aristocracy. Saturdays is Serial Killer Saturdays, where we investigate serial killer stories from the past. And Sundays is a bit of fun, with a unique mini-murder mystery where you, the listener, have a chance to solve a murderous riddle. On the last Sunday of the month, we offer a 2-hour compilation of stories based around a theme. If you like this channel, you may be interested in our sister channel, Chronicle of the Times, where we offer a lighter side of Victorian and Edwardian news stories, as well as a weekly podcast of stories from authors of the day, such as Dickens, Collins, Benson, and Conan Doyle. Thank you again for watching and listening. This has been News of the Times, and I am Robin Coles.